present the news quiz with your chairman, Barry Took.
Hello and welcome once again to the news quiz. We start with a cutting from The Times, read by Charlotte Green.
John O'Hanlon Smart of Hendon, Tyne and Wear used a manhole cover to smash a shop window, then stepped back and fell down the hole.
Well, thank you, Pam Taylor of Gravesend, for sending us that. Well, now let's meet the teams. We do welcome first, on my right, Richard Ingrams and Francis Ween. Facing them, on my left, Alan Corran and Tony Slattery. Richard, your question, as always, comes first, and it's this. Who ensured nastiness hit the curb?
It wasn't Michael Hard, was it?
It sort of was.
It was. I'm going to do a U-turn on that one, Barry, and say that, after all, it was Michael Hard. Anyway, it must refer to the crackdown, or not, on the video nasties.
That's exactly it, yeah.
Actually, it was done by Mr. David Alton, wasn't it? The Lib Dem, or one of those?
Something like that.
Yes, it's absolutely so. Yes. It's this week's Home Secretary, Michael Hard, who introduced prison sentences to prevent children viewing video nasties like Driller Killer and Shape Up and Dance with Michael Winner. The government climbed down, the first since last Monday, will introduce a whole vocabulary to our penal system. What are you in for? I'm a sound of music trafficker. The bill received unanimous cabinet support. Even Michael Heseltine showed concern for the welfare of minors. Well, there's a novelty. Francis, welcome to the programme. Who's banking on openness to revive our rate of interest?
Kenneth Clark, not Michael Howard this time. This is this week's Chancellor of the Exchequer. Fatty Clark, who has published the minutes, and is going to go on publishing the minutes until we get bored to death of them, of his meetings with the Governor of the Bank of England. Absolutely gripping. Every month he has a meeting with the Governor of the Bank of England, and Kenneth Clark says, I think interest rates should come down by 1%. The Governor says, no, I think they shouldn't go down at all. And they wrestle for about 90 minutes in this manner, and then in the penalty shootout they agree that they'll lower them by 0.25% or something like that. And he's, every month we're going to be bored to death with these wretched dialogues, but sort of Peter Cook and Dudley Moore type things between the Governor and the Chancellor.
Yes, you have it absolutely so. This is about Chancellor Kenneth Clark, who is to publish details of his regular discussions with the Bank of England regarding crucial economic decision-making. Mr. Clark, currently wanted by the RSPCA for hush puppy abuse, said his decision was designed to make his policies more transparent. They get more transparent, they'll be absolutely invisible. Now, Tony, welcome back to the programme.
Thank you.
What red rocked Strasbourg with a green-fingered attack?
Ooh. Now, this will be the Strasbourg event. Thanks very much, ladies and gentlemen. Oh, dear me.
It's the Intercontinental Ballistic Aspidistra.
I rest my case.
Zhirinovsky.
Oh, Zhirinovsky, that's right.
It's through the garden at Jewish protesters.
Oh, yes, there was an awful incident where this dreadful Nazi was threatening to shoot these peaceable Jewish protesters. He's clearly mad.
No, it was after Zhirinovsky's goodwill mission to the Barmy, as you said.
To the Barmy.
I think that was it.
But he did throw a pot plant at them instead of shooting them.
He came to the railings and threw a pot plant.
He held a pot plant at them.
Geranium abuse.
Geranium abuse? What are you talking about, silly devil?
But that's an indication of his level of sanity, and that he did actually threaten to shoot them and then produced a pot plant. So I think he just gets confused. Poor thing.
Anyway, it is Vladimir Zhirinovsky, the Russian nationalist leader and high-scoring Scrabble word, who made European history this week by becoming the first man ever to do something of interest in Strasbourg. Zhirinovsky then suggested Russia was going to bomb European cities. In response, NATO immediately mobilised 5 Interflora airborne divisions. Alan, here's a piece of music for you.
Oh, no. I love it.
called Dreadlock Holiday by 10cc, and your question is, whose ancient duck was finally broken?
We speak a day or so after England won the first test that a visiting side has won in Barbados for 59 years. A miracle. There's nothing to say about it. I mean, it's... is there? I mean, I normally deal in tragedy and disaster where we have a bit of a laugh. As soon as you get something immoderately successful like this...
Part of the Martin Lewis thing.
Well, it just shows you how irritating good news is. There's no grist to this particular mill. Had they been trounced again, we'd have had a joke or two. But they will be. Just hang on. Wait for Antigua.
Anyway, it is England's cricket team who beat the West Indies in Bridgetown for the first time since 1935. Celebrations were delayed while Mike Atherton looked up the word victory in a dictionary. This was also thought to be a bonus for lucky long-wave listeners as the match ended early until they found they were back with Anderson country. And the scores at the end of the first round are... Oh, we're back to tradition after a strange one last week where both sides have scored four. It's a draw so far. We start round two with a letter from the Times.
Sir, about 30 years ago, a Royal Marine Commando team successfully climbed Mount Kinabalu up a precipitous side. The group photograph posed on the summit was almost spoiled by the simultaneous arrival up the tourist path of a Girl Guide picnic party.
Well, thank you, whoever sent that to us. Richard, your question again. Where is a foreign union being farmed out?
I think it may have something to do with the fact that certain British farmers have joined up with the anti-GATT campaign, which is...
We.
This is rather amazing. This is almost more historic than England's test win, I think. But it may be that I've answered two questions in successive rounds correctly. Yeah. Is it right?
Yes, it is.
Yes. Yes. They joined the French Farmers Union. Yeah. He used to learn about French farming practices, like setting fire to lorries.
Yes.
But they've got a lot of recruits now. Since the Daily Telegraph ran a story about it this week, they've been bombarded with British farmers joining this French union.
Have they?
Yeah. Union of Revolutionary French Farmers, or whatever it's called.
Very good. Very good joint
effort.
Bloody
boring, isn't it, really?
It's gripping.
Alan's right. Good news doesn't mean a thing.
No good.
This is all about a Mr. Graham Woolley, who became the first British farmer to join the militant French farming union, Coordination Rurale, the French equivalent of the NFU, or as they call it in France, NFU2. There were initially a few inquiries from Welsh hill farmers to go over for an exhibition of sheep shearing, but it seems they must have misheard. Francis.
Do the octopus.
Is that a dance?
Or... No.
Sorry.
There's a giant octopus in Los Angeles Aquarium.
No.
It was found dead. It pulled the plug out during the night. It's a wonderful story. Dead octopus always gets them laughing. You know my audience. Yeah.
Francis, who is Beware of Greeks Taking Away Gifts?
Beware of Greeks Taking Away Gifts? Well, usually when this question comes up, which is about once a month, it's the Elgin Marbles, but this probably isn't the Elgin Marbles.
It's about a person.
It's about a person. A Greek person.
Yes, he is.
Well,
my name will help you a little.
Now Richard's on song. He can help me out.
It's to do with King Constantine.
Oh, that Greek. Oh, yes. Well, I was thinking Melina McCoury's dead now, so there is only one.
Excuse me.
It's three in a row, Ingram.
This is King Constantine, who's had all his palaces, castles, residences, baubles, jewels, everything taken away by the Greek government. And he's making a fuss about it.
Yes.
But there's not much he can do because he's not allowed into the country. He tried to go there last year and they sent a gunboat to shoo him away. So he's rather stuck with it, but he's not very happy.
And one of the things at issue is the Duke of Edinburgh's birthplace, which could be taken away from him, which would be very upsetting for many people in this country, I feel. So we're going to make a formal protest about that.
Well, you are.
Save the Duke of Edinburgh's birthplace. Well, you can tell from the audience is right behind this one.
This is ex-King Constantine of Greece, who is threatened to sue the Athens government for taking away his kingdom, his palaces, and his citizenship. The loss of his passport is a blow. Not only will it restrict travel, but now he's got nowhere to write. Occupation, freelance, self-employed monarch. Constantine is upset with the Greek prime minister, whom he accuses of being an undemocratic, unelected autocrat. So he's taken over his job as well now. Sonny, will you have a listen to this?
Stay with me. Now you better stay with me.
that was, of course, Stay With Me by Rod Stewart. And your question is, who is supposedly Sophie's choice on a trial basis?
Ah, I think this is Prince Edward and his live-in lover. They're giving it a bash. They're sort of almost common law man and wife, really, and they're just seeing how it goes. He sort of failed at the Marines, so he's giving a bash at women.
Yes, I suppose that's the answer. This is the ridiculous rumour in the papers that Prince Edward is living with a woman. There have been quite a number of pages devoted to the prince recently. But that's an... Oh, look, I'm not going on. The rumour, as expressed this week, is that the royal family has decided that he and his girlfriend, Sophie Rees-Jones, should have a trial marriage, so they've stopped talking to each other, and Sophie's advertised for a financial advisor. Alan, who made a massive packet out of their little package?
It's not about that polystyrene condom.
You're floundering.
A massive packet.
Is it the down-and-out who got £70,000 in back payments on the DHS?
No.
Thanks.
It's not the woman who got 300,000 quid for getting pregnant.
That's not that. No. Other. It's Gad and Hans Rolsing.
Very good.
Is that right?
Brilliant. What about that?
But they make those milk cartons that you can't open, and then when you do open them, they tear and spill milk all over the table. Right. And on the strength of making those, they are the richest people in Britain, richer even than the Queen, £1.25 billion something out of useless milk cartons. Incredible, but true.
Quite true. Well done. Bonus point there. You're absolutely right, Francis. It was first painted in 1958 and first opened in 1974. The Sunday Times list of Britain's 500 richest people contained quite a few surprises, the biggest being that there are still 500 rich people in Britain. The Rausing brothers came here from Sweden to avoid paying tax. Apparently, Rausing is Swedish for Ken Dodd. Thank you, sir.
He was acquitted on all charges.
Of course he was. We've come to the end of yet another round, and the score's quite interesting. Alan and Tony are 6, but Richard and Francis have leapt into the lead with 9. We start round 3 with a cutting from the Worcester Evening News.
A merger between two local navigation trusts will top the agenda at a special meeting. Members of the Lower Avon Navigation Trust Limited, based in Wyre Piddle, are being asked if they want to merge with the Upper Avon Navigation Trust. The new group will be called the Avon Navigation Trust.
Thank heavens for that. Think it what it might have been. Anyway, thank you, Andy O'Hare, for sending us that. Richard, your question again. Who tried to go round the pole but went round the horn?
Who went round the pole? Is it Sir Ranulph Fiennes, by any chance?
No, it's not, I'm afraid. Some the magic has departed. Francis, do you know about this one? About a lady sailor?
Round the horn. Well, pole... Not P-O-double-L type pole.
It's a lady sailor.
No.
Not the single-handed woman sailor. That.
Yes.
Is that all?
Yes.
I thought there was... No, there's much more than that.
These are meant to be cryptic.
Turn my attention to the other side, gentlemen.
Well, he said it was a single-handed woman sailor.
Well.
What she was doing with the other hand, I've no idea. But she was... She was lost.
Misnavigated.
She was lost in the South Atlantic because her compass had fallen overboard and was probably at the bottom of her handbag. Politically incorrect joke.
You'll be lucky to get out of here alive. It's all about Anna Lisa Guy, who went missing for 2 months while trying to sail her yacht round the frozen wastes of Antarctica. She was eventually saved by the Royal Navy as she approached the Falkland Islands. She was very lucky. If she'd been going the other way, they'd probably have torpedoed her. Francis, here's a piece of music for you.
Short people are just the same as you and I. Fools that
Well, that was Short People by Randy Newman. Whose short history told tall tales?
Is this the Edinburgh professor?
Yes.
Who, it's one of those... Academics seem to have nothing to do with their time except state the obvious. And this chap popped up this week and addressed a conference in Scotland saying that short people were rarely just as nice as tall people. taken him years of research to prove this point. He himself was 5'2", by the way. Just he made a plea for general tolerance and said, be nice to short people.
That's right.
Which we all are.
This is all about 5'2", tall Dr. David Weeks, who hit out at society's pernicious and patronising attitude towards short people. Well, he would, the cheeky little elf. The differently tall doctor claimed short people were less likely to get jobs, an accusation denied by major employer Snow White. As a result of his passionate address to the Edinburgh Science Festival, Dr. Weeks has gone up in everyone's estimation. Unfortunately, it's given him vertigo. Tony, who was doled out 3 years after signing famously?
Well, this is about the dole. And that's lunch, everyone. No, after signing famously...
It could be a misprint for singing famously.
Yes, well, is this the one about back payments?
This is the one about payments, but not back payments.
Yes, well, it's about dole payments.
Yes, but to whom, from whom, and that is...
I think that's largely irrelevant.
What?
It's an enormously famous person, and a certain amount of dole money was given to them. And I can't say fairer than that. I don't want to name names, it's just not right.
He's worming out of it. I don't know at all. Nobody know this one. It happened in Birmingham. I'm not going to give anybody points. This was JP and Labour councillor Namdev Bagla, who was sentenced to 3 years for cashing £150,000 worth of stolen DSS vouchers. He signed benefit checks in the names of M. Jagger, Y. Brinner, and J. Major. It's the first time John Major's signature has been worth anything. Initially, he tried to blame his wife, Mrs. M. Munro, but then blamed pressure of work as a magistrate. He got specially confused when he came up before himself. Alan, whose thirst for medical knowledge will cost them £60,000?
It must be people who have something to do with the fact that if we go on holiday, we're liable to be extremely tense and very upset. And it's probably some Swiss drug company which is investigating why people behave worse and get more ill on the holiday. Isn't it?
No.
Is it Lagerland?
I wasn't facing
yes,
that.
Yes, it is Lagerland.
It's Lagerland, yes. It's another experiment from the Institute of Extremely Expensive Pointless Studies, where a lot of doctors got together to assess why people behave in an appalling manner when they've drunk a bit abroad.
Right.
They're in Glasgow, these people, and they've got this grant, and they're going to stand at Glasgow Airport and interview holidaymakers when they come back, and the purpose of the thing is to find out why people become sex-crazed lagerlats on holiday, and they're actually going to stand there and accost these holidaymakers and say, excuse me, why do you become a sex-crazed lagerlat?
This is the Medical Research Council, which is spending £60,000 to find out what turns Britons into lagerlats. The council has devised a questionnaire for the lagerlats, which includes questions like, are you looking at me, pal? Meanwhile, doctors have come up with the perfect antidote to holidays crammed with sex and fun. It's called Eastbourne. And the scores in the third round are still remarkable because Alan and Tony are 9, but Richard and Francis are still in the lead with 11. Before we start the final round, here's a snippet from the Lloyd's List.
A giant white mouse chanting, rats have rights, was arrested for mischief after disrupting a Toronto conference on animal genetics. Police said that she was arrested after attempts to lure her away with cheese failed.
Delightfully silly story, that. Richard, will you have a listen to this? That was Bruce Springsteen, and the song was Born to Run. Now, the question is, what makes a date for sporting success?
There's a paranormal clue coming through here now. I see a number of Dutch researchers, I think. They have discovered that... after investigating Gaza and people like that, that the world's best footballers are all born in September.
That's right. That was incredible, Richard, the way you answered that.
It was paranormal.
It was.
British footballers, good British footballers, are born in September.
All sports.
The Dutch one, no, because the Dutch ones, the best Dutch footballers are born in August for some reason. It's all to do with the start of the season, and the British season starts in September, and so British footballers are born in September, whereas Dutch ones, they apparently start playing in August, and so their footballers are born, and tennis players are born, at the start of the tennis season. It's from the same people who are interviewing holidaymakers at Glasgow Airport and telling them to be nice to short people.
It is news that sporting prowess is dictated by date of birth. For example, it's been discovered that the best footballers in Britain are born in September and October, and in Italy. Francis, who is living off the fat of the land, but is less than legal, decent, and honest?
This is fattism. But the stories that aren't about being nice to short people are about fat people. There's so many fat people stories. I'm trying to remember. It's not Kenneth Clark, and it's not Dawn French, and it's not Robert Maxwell.
It's
dead. And it's there's an advertisement which
you're giving paranormal advice.
Yes,
again.
I am.
It's to do with advertising.
Yes,
I could tell that.
Yes, I can tell that. I'm just trying to remember what the fat, which fat. Yes, the Advertising Standards Authority. Yeah.
Well, you said it's Advertising Standards Authority, but I'll give you one for effort. Yes. And heaving and moiling and trying to answer, but I'll pass it over to the other side for a bonus.
Well, it's all those slimming aids. They don't actually work. I mean, you eat these bits of polystyrene, and you're supposed to shed tons, but it doesn't work. And ads for all these things that reduce your body weight are worse than ads for anything else.
Because it was a series of ads that actually said that you could eat as much as you liked and lose weight.
Well, they always do, but in Diamond Point at the bottom, it says something like, this must be done as part of a diet suggested by short people at Scottish University. and it is a pack of lies.
The slimming industry watchdog, Off Podge, say that offending ads are frequently removed but are usually replaced by something just as bad. Well, that's slimming for you. No matter what you take off, it always comes back again. Tony, who wasn't stripped of her tax breaks?
Oh, yes, I remember this. This was the United States stripper whose breasts were so large that they defied the laws of gravity. And there was a chapter written about them in Stephen Hawking's book, A Brief History of Time. And she tried to get her breasts certified as tax-deductible assets.
Well, they were quite small to start with.
Were they? What happened? Yes. Just inflation.
According to Financial Times, she was a 34 B cup to start with.
That's not very small, is it?
But in The Economist, it said she went up to a 66 D cup because she wanted to impress the audience. And she's getting the silicon transplants off. It's part of the Whitewater scandal, I think. Clinton has arranged to have her sorted out, and she's getting the money back. But it was the silicon that was chargeable against tax.
Right. Yes.
These were tools of her trade.
They were indeed.
Yes.
And
without
other people.
Which she cannot work.
Mm. Quite right. Allowing the appeal, the 38-man jury heard her husband claim... Allowing the appeal, the 38-man jury heard her husband claim that the operation had driven them apart. Alan.
What
frozen asset came under the hammer?
It isn't that car that was made out of old bits. Ah. Well, there's a car that's made out of old bits. The frosty thing was it was made out of fridges. There was a man who spent 50 years with all these old fridges in his living room, sawing them up and cobbling together. And eventually he made a two-seater car, which came up this week, and someone got 40,000 quid for it. His daughter got 40,000 quid for it, or something like that. And I knew... The interesting thing about it, because it's a fascinating story, is that its badge on the front is made from an apostle teaspoon. It sounds like the top and bottom of the British car industry. I mean, they've worked for 30 years and they've bolted together four fridges and a teaspoon and they've finally got something somebody wants to buy. It's the only car made in Britain this year.
Yes, you're absolutely right. It's the Merlin Ares, a car which took 45 years to build out of old bits of refrigerator and was sold for £15,750. The next lot was a fridge made out of old bits of Skoda, but it didn't reach its reserve. The Merlin came complete with a Jaguar engine, MG wheels, and a packet of Birdseye frozen peas in the glove box. The new owner says it's lovely to drive, except the headlights come on every time he opens the door. And on, there's more. Thank you, I do appreciate that. There is more. And on bumpy roads, he has to keep stopping to stick the little magnets back on. That's the top and bottom of that. And before we reveal the final scores, let's see what cuttings the teams have brought along. Richard, have you got a cutting for us?
This is an item, Barry, from the Forest of Dean and Wye Valley Review. I don't know if you're familiar with that. It says, a passerby's late-night report of smoke issuing from a doorway in Caldecott brought two fire engines, police and a local councillor to the scene. But they found that the smoke was in fact the product of a steamy human embrace. It was being generated, said police, by an extremely passionate couple in the doorway of the OAP day centre.
Thank you. Francis.
This is a front page headline, lead story, on the front of the Church of England newspaper last month. Clergy warned, your graveyards could be death traps.
Thank you. And passing briskly on, Tony.
This is a short but irate letter to the Stockport Messenger on the subject of dog mess. Dogs are not the only pests to foul pavements. Car owners are just as bad.
Depends where you live, I suppose. Alan.
I have a little vignette from the Watford Evening Echo, Barry. It says, a party of visiting Korean businessmen has lodged a formal complaint at Watford Town Hall after a local cab driver charged them £50 for driving them to what he claimed was a bordello licensed by the Watford Tourist Authority, where the girls all spoke Korean. Since none of the businessmen had anything but rudimentary English, it took some time to persuade them that they had in fact been brought to the King Street Bridge Club. How long it took to persuade them.
Anyway, thank you all. Let's look at the final scores, which are quite interesting, because for the first time in this series, it's a draw. 14 all. Well played, all of you. Before we leave you, here's a cutting from the Wiltshire and Gloucestershire Standard.
Physiotherapy is one of the most popular departments in the hospital and is always crowded with patients eager to start their treatment. Whether a gruelling hour of circuit training, the soothing effects of a large cold ice pack, or having a roll on a mat with a keen physiotherapist.
And with that, goodbye.
Taking part in the news quiz were Richard Ingram, Alan Corran, Francis Ween and Tony Slattery. The chairman was Barry Took and the news was read by me, Charlotte Green. The programme was written by Ian Pattinson and Robert Fraser-Steele. The producer was Aled Evans.
Present the news quiz with your chairman, Barry Took.
Hello and welcome once again to the news quiz. We start with this cutting sent in by Ida Cook from Southampton and read by Brian Perkins.
An armed raider who held up a betting shop in Toxteth, Liverpool, came face to face with a policeman. He was telling staff how to deal with armed raiders.
Well, now let's meet the teams. Will you welcome first, on my right, Richard Ingrams and Peter Cook. Facing them, on my left, Alan Corran and Nick Clark. Before we start round one, here's a report from the Surrey and Hampshire News.
The elderly man who caused a widespread search when he went missing from his home at Tilford last month was apparently surprised at all the fuss. According to Surrey police, he had been late home because he stopped to watch the helicopter.